This podcast is brought to you by Knowledge at Wharton. For more information, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.
We have seen a sharp rise in the number of billionaires over the last decade as the gap between the haves and the have-nots continues to grow. But that's also growing the number of philanthropists in the United States. And these people are wielding more and more power with charities. That influence they're bringing forth may be for the good for the most part, but there are also instances when it may not necessarily be in the best interest of the charities and the people that benefit from them. David Callahan is the founder and editor of the website Inside Philanthropy. He takes an in-depth look at the influence of all of these new billionaires in his book, The Givers, Wealth, Power, and Philanthropy in a New Gilded Age. And David joins us here in our studio. Nice to meet you.
Great to be here.
Thank you for coming in. So what truly is, I mean, we see all of this money rolling in. So what do you see as the state of philanthropy right now?
There's a lot of it going on. And it's really the next chapter, what I call this New Gilded Age, that really got going in the 1980s. Right. With the back when the Forbes 400 was first published, that list of the wealthiest Americans, it had only 13 billionaires. That you could get on the list if you had $80 million. Now, you need $1.7 billion to get on that list. A lot of billionaires don't even make it onto the Forbes 400. And many of those people who are on the list, they're turning to philanthropy. They have a lot of extra money. They want to solve problems. And they're charging forward with their giving.
Some staggering notes that you bring forward. $27 trillion in donations to charities the next 5 years. And now on average, what, $350 billion a year? I mean, that's a lot. I mean, we should be able to be curing every cancer, every medical issue, everything in the world with that kind of money.
Well, just to keep it in perspective, the federal government spends about $4 trillion a year. So the philanthropic donations still don't rival what government has. But here's the thing, which is that the portion of government money that can go for discretionary spending to cure diseases, to engage in environmental protection, to send a man to Mars, whatever, that portion is shrinking. And so philanthropists are stepping forward to do things that often government can't.
Right. So it's more of a private-public partnership more so than ever before.
Yes, and we see this a lot with public parks, for example. In New York City, a billionaire Barry Diller stepped forward to put a little island park off the west side of Manhattan, caused a lot of controversy. Yeah. That High Line in New York City, people have been to New York City, well, walked on the High Line Park. That was built with private money.
But it seems like also, and this is another statistic you bring up, that the number of foundations also is soaring as well.
Absolutely. In the last 15 years, there's been about 30,000 new private foundations created by wealthy people. And, the numbers of people who have extra money to give away is staggering. Here's a statistic that blew my mind. 70,000 U.S. households have assets of $30 million or more, not including their real estate. So that's like some serious liquid money. You know, if you want to try to do some good in the world, you have that spare change to do it.
You will not find one of those households in this studio. None of us fall into that category, unfortunately. We're talking with David Callahan, who's the author of the book, The Givers, Wealth, Power, and Philanthropy in a New Gilded Age. This is Knowledge at Wharton on Sirius XM 111 Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. So you talk about this pull. Obviously, people expect certain things to be done with their money when they are giving it to charity. How much of it is always done for good, and how much of it is causing angst in other areas, as you bring up, in like public policy as well?
Well, it depends upon your point of view. Yeah. You know, Michael Bloomberg, for example, is given $130 million to shut down coal-fired power plants working with the Sierra Club. If you're worried about climate change, if you're worried about coal pollution, that's great, right? He's been successful in helping shut down those plants. If you're a coal miner or you work in the coal industry, that's not so great. So, or charter schools. If you like charter schools, these billionaires have put a lot of money behind that. That's fantastic if your kid goes to a charter school. If you feel like public education shouldn't be run by billionaires, you may have more of a problem.
But that one specifically does bring up, obviously, a bigger question of, you know, we have cities like here in Philadelphia, Chicago, other locations where the public school system is struggling, certainly could use the funding.
Absolutely.
Yet you have the charter element, which is now seen as the next step beyond public education to be able to provide kids with what they need to be able to go on to college or, you know, take that next step after school. So, I mean, it's a tough push and pull right here.
Absolutely, yes. And there's no sort of simple answers or analysis. My book is pretty rich and nuanced, talking about sort of the pros and cons of this. Philadelphia is a great example. You know, this is a city that's been hurt by fiscal cuts. The budget, you know, budgets have gotten whacked for education. Many private donors have stepped forward to help out, but they have done so with strings attached. You know, they want the schools to change in certain ways. They want more charters. They want more teacher accountability. And you have to ask, well, is that any way to run a city education system, that you kind of give power to billionaires in exchange for money that the taxpayers won't put forth themselves?
And then the impact of that means that as much as you want to see good done, there are instances where it's not being done properly. And especially with schools, that's something that you really just, you can't play around with. And it's hard for the school systems, as you said, because they want to kind of do the programs that they know need to be done. But if somebody else is footing the bill, it's hard to say, okay, well, you don't have any say in you what we're doing with your $20 million that you're giving.
Yes, with money comes influence, for sure. And you want a good example of how these things can go wrong? Just look at what happened in Newark, where
there was a $100 million
dollar that was, you know, all with the best of intentions, but didn't get the community buy-in, and there was a lot of backlash to that.
There was a lot made in the last couple of years, and you talk about it, about the Giving Pledge. The idea that Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and those gentlemen had putting together the group of the uber wealthy to be able to give away a majority of their wealth towards charity. When that came out, I think everybody jumped on board and said, this is a great idea. I mean, why we hadn't seen that come forth before. So now as it's playing out, what's its impact?
It's still too early to say, but about 150 billionaires in the United States and around the world have now signed that giving pledge to committing themselves to give away at least half their wealth. Among them is Mark Zuckerberg, who committed to give away 99% of his Facebook stock to try to solve problems, along with his wife Priscilla Chan. You know, what's not to like on the one hand, right? This is sort of a solution to economic inequality, to have the rich give it back, right? Except that, you know, who is Mark Zuckerberg to have that kind of power as a private citizen? And it does raise troubling questions about who's in the driver's seat of American life. Yeah. Because here's the thing. Government as an agent for change to solve problems is going to continue to sort of be on a downward trajectory as those budget cuts kick in, not just at the federal level, what we're seeing right now with the Trump administration, but at the state and local level, as we've been discussing in Philadelphia. But it's the same is true in other cities, pension obligations that were underfunded are kicking in. And so sort of philanthropy is rising with that, all those giving pledge billionaires coming in, and government is on the decline.
So what does that mean then for government going forward? Because you said if their influence is going down, obviously we could be looking at a very interesting period of time coming up in the next couple of decades where government may be changing to a degree, and we may be going, I don't want to say we're going away from a democracy, but it sure feels like we're being pulled at least a little bit the other way.
It's a little starting to look a little like a benign plutocracy with a lot of these really well-meaning, wealthy people having growing influence. And I think, it's hard to say how that will play out, but it's important to have the conversation now to bring attention to this. And I think most Americans don't pay much attention to philanthropy. When they think about philanthropy or charity, they think about donations to universities, to hospitals, to museums. They don't think about people using their money to push a public policy agenda, to have a lot of say in what government does.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, there are so many pieces, realistically, beyond giving to your college or, you know, your high school or whatever it is that people are looking to do. And from that perspective, it's a good thing is that we're trying to expand kind of the idea of what giving is and what entities are available to give to. But again, going back to that influence thing, then you're just kind of opening the door to more influence in more different sectors. And it's, you know, it, it, It's like trying to juggle balls.
Well, I'll give you another good example of how money, private philanthropy has had a big impact, which is LGBT rights. Okay. So in my book, I talk about Tim Gill, who was one of the top, he made his money in tech. He created a foundation. He put all of the money in the foundation dedicated to one cause, which is advancing LGBT rights. And along with other funders, really accelerated that move to marriage equality, mm-hmm. you know, and the, getting that Supreme Court victory, which they fought up through the courts. And, you know, if you believe in marriage equality, that's a great example of philanthropy kind of speeding along progress, right, more rights for more people. If you're uncomfortable with marriage equality, you're like, wait a minute, didn't you know these wealthy donors kind of maneuvered this issue faster than maybe citizens would have been comfortable.
I guess when you think about this as a whole, the idea that you have all of these people with more wealth, but the fact that they want to be involved in philanthropy, that's the good piece to it.
Absolutely. And particularly with many of these billionaires worrying about the plight of poor people and the low-income kids who are struggling in our schools. Right. You know, who would have thought back in the 1980s, you know, during the Bonfire of the Vanities, Age of Greed era, that
Miami Vice.
Yeah, that the big cause of hedge fund billionaires would be, you know, poor kids in the inner cities. And it is. That is one of their major causes.
Yeah.
You know, in New York City, there's a foundation called the Robin Hood Foundation, which now raises about $160 million every year from these wealthy finance people to fight poverty in New York City. I mean, that is a sea change, and it's a positive thing. You know, we don't want to just say, oh, all this philanthropy is a bad thing.
Right.
Many of these people also are coming from business. They're good at solving problems. They know how to scale up organizations, manage people. They're innovative. A lot of the philanthropists from the tech sector, they have new ideas. I mean, there's a lot to be excited about here as well.
Still, you would like to see more transparency on how this whole process is actually working, right?
At the very least, we need to know where this money is coming from and where it's going. You know, we've heard a lot about dark money in politics, you know, money flowing anonymously to candidates and political parties. Well, there's also a lot of dark money in philanthropy, and much of that money is going to the same things. You know, it's also aimed at trying to influence what government does. It's a form of political spending.
Yeah.
But it's all tax deductible. You can get a charitable deduction for giving money to kind of sway public policy, and I'm not sure that that's what Americans think of when they think of charity.
Well, and still, you know, we're at a time where, as I said at the top, we've got this divide economically in this country. It would probably be better if we didn't have as much of a divide and we had more people being able to give. I mean, certainly we have the wealthy that have that amount and they're throwing as much money as they can. But it probably would be better to be able to close that gap a little bit and open up the opportunities for other people to want to give and to be able to help out as well.
It's a good point you make, and it underscores a troubling fact that I noted in my book, which is that giving by ordinary Americans has been flat or going down, while giving by the people at the very top has been going up. And, of course, that reflects the economic trends that we're seeing with all this inequality, which is that all the income gains in the last 15 years have gone to that top 1%. They're the people who have the extra money lying around to do something charitable. And most households are running in place or they're losing ground and they don't have some extra money to. So the civil society that we have, the charitable sector, is increasingly kind of being dominated by these wealthy people.
It is part of the reason why we see this kind of shift and want for power in charity by people that have the resources, partly because these are probably people that to begin with are already people that donate quite a bit of money to political realms. And they have this expectation anyway from that sector. And it's just a natural thing that it comes right over with them in their mindset to the charitable reign.
Well, some of them give a lot to politics and they also give a lot to philanthropy. Some of them don't give much to politics at all. But many of them, the most sophisticated ones, they're good at pulling all the levers of influence. They know that if they want to advance an agenda, whether it's for LGBT rights or the environment or low taxes and fiscal conservatism, they know that they will be most effective if they invest in all the different avenues of change. So they give money to think tanks and policy groups and litigation organizations activist groups to kind of push that agenda with their charitable dollars. They give money to politicians and super PACs. They give money to lobbyists, right?
Yeah,
and that
yeah.
is that that is enormous amount of leverage that these people have that most citizens couldn't even imagine having. You know, if most citizens want to, you know, when the average person wants to try to change something, you know, maybe they can sign a petition or yeah. write their representative. You know, they can't bankroll a think tank to come up with new ideas to hand off to policymakers.
David Callahan is the author of the book The Givers: Wealth, Power, and Philanthropy in a New Gilded Age. He is the founder and editor of the website Inside Philanthropy. Your comments welcome at 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. Or if you're not able to get to your phone, you're more than welcome to send us a comment via Twitter, and we'll bring it up on the show at BizRadio111 or my Twitter account, which is at DanLoney21. Is there a path that you see to maybe trying to eliminate, I mean, beyond the transparency part,
yeah.
but are there kind of ideas that you have that are solutions to try and really kind of be able to keep this charitable giving on focus, on point, without a lot of the strings attached?
Yeah, well, one idea that I discuss in the book is to see if we can try to limit some of this politicized giving. You know, is it okay that billionaires get a tax deduction for giving money to groups that work closely with political parties to advance an agenda? You know, in the past 30 years, philanthropists have built up this whole network of think tanks
right.
in Washington, the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, the American Enterprise Institute. Those are all organizations on the right that have been bankrolled by conservative donors. And then on the left, liberal donors kind of got with it and built up their own network of think tanks like the Center for American Progress. And many of these work hand in glove with people in government and
yeah.
with partisan political officials. The Heritage Foundation right now is one of the big forces in the Trump administration. You know, Trump did not just come into office with all those executive orders in his briefcase.
Right,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Did it bring those down from Trump Tower, right? No, he turned to the experts. He turned to places like the Heritage Foundation, very far conservative organization, bankrolled by tens of millions of dollars
yeah.
every year in donations. And so you have to ask, well, is that... Does giving money to a group like that really count as charity? Should they get the same tax deduction? And I suggest probably not, that we need to kind of redraw the line. We want, you know, with trillions of dollars, as you say, no, as you noted, coming into philanthropy, we want to see that money go ideally to more hands-on efforts to help communities, to help children, to
yeah.
build up cultural institutions, to help universities. We don't want to see it just go into this bigger and louder ideological combat between billionaires. It's like watching these gods throw lightning bolts at each other, you know,
yeah.
and battling it out in this sort of war of ideas, all at taxpayer expense.
And it's not like we're, you know, you would pick one sector over another in terms of the benefit of giving more money to that particular area, like giving money to charter schools or, you know, giving money to fight homelessness. These are all areas that are of a concern at some degree
right.
here in the United States. And they are all very, you know, worthy of receiving support from philanthropic ventures across the United States.
Well, maybe. I mean, there's been a lot of controversy about charter schools. People,
right.
people
exactly.
feel that not everybody, you know, that this has been sort of pushed on a lot of communities by business philanthropists who believe in choice and more market competition. And, you know, here's the thing about wealthy donors is that they're not – the rich really are different from the rest of us.
Yeah.
They have different views. They, you know, surveys show, for example, that they tend to be much more economically conservative. So it'd be one thing if we had this kind of large group of wealthy donors who were a perfect mirror of the American public and they gave money to every cause across the spectrum.
Right.
But that's not been the case. We have – instead, those donors tend to be – coalesce around certain ideas, and with education reform, you know, almost all the new donors who've come in, philanthropists who've come into that field, have put their money behind charter schools and choice and accountability. And those ideas, a lot of people are not so sure those are the solutions to our education problems.
Is it a concern that we're going to get to a point here in the next, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years where the money that these entities, these people are bringing forth ends up being more important than what the government can provide. I mean, especially when you think about something like here in Philadelphia a couple of years ago, there was, you know, a run of water main breaks here in the city, and there was much concern about the water here in the city. Well, obviously, Flint, Michigan, there's a concern about the water there. I mean, and, you know, these are elements that the government's supposed to take care of, but you can almost see, like, the investment from the private sector coming in this area as well.
Well, Flint, Michigan is a great example. So after it turned out that that water was contaminated, a number of foundations stepped forward and gave $120 million to help provide clean water in Flint and solve some other problems in the city. When Detroit was going bankrupt, a number of foundations stepped forward and helped bail it out with an $800 million bailout. In Kalamazoo, another Michigan city. I don't know what it is about Michigan.
Must be a pattern there, yeah.
You know, it was facing a big budget deficit. A number two philanthropists stepped forward and put up $80 million to bail out the city. We just saw in Hartford, Connecticut, a number of insurance companies coming forward with philanthropic contributions to help bail out the city of Hartford.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's with that, again, with those donations comes power, right? You don't write a check to bail out the city and not have some say over what happens next.
City of Hartford's another issue, considering they just built a baseball stadium in there in a city which is going through, you know, amazing, you know, financial issues right now as well. Thank you very much for coming in.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Great book. David Callahan, The Givers, Wealth, Power, and Philanthropy in a New Gilded Age. The book is available in bookstores and online right now. You can find it. And again, David's website, if you'd like to follow it, Inside Philanthropy, you can check it out on the web. Many thanks to David coming in today.
For more business news and analysis from Knowledge at Wharton, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.